Case number 22-1792. Ian Scott Anderman and David Supley, appellants, versus Robert Martinez et al. Mr. Keegan for the appellants, Mr. Hudson Platt for the appellees.
Morning.
Good morning, and to counsel as well. I'm Thomas Gagan, and I am counsel for the plaintiffs' appellants, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time. On two major grounds, the trusteeship of District Lodge 142 is illegal and even void ab initio, of no effect, to quote the leading law of the circuit. And under the law of the circuit, the elected leadership should be reinstated, should go back to the status quo before this void trusteeship was put into place.
Let me just clarify a couple of things. The trusteeship, though, did not depose the elected leadership. That happened prior to the trusteeship, right?
The formal trusteeship did not, but trusteeship has a functional definition under 402H. It is any method of control or supervision. It's important to keep in mind that when the LMRDA was passed in 1959, parent unions had all sorts of names for things that were trusteeships but were not formally called trusteeships. The removal of the plaintiffs without any notice as to the specifics was on January 25th. And the trusteeship notice was on January 26th. They were twinned. And the removal of the elected leadership of a district lodge of 20,000 members, their elected leadership, summarily, without any hearing, by one person, Defendant Cervantes, not even by the entire IAM, just by her, is certainly a method of control or supervision and a trusteeship. And I will use those terms, we use the broader term of trusteeship.
So why is there a Title I of the Act then? If the title, I don't understand.
Well, Title III is, as various courts have pointed out, including the Sixth Circuit, we cited Thompson, it's for the district lodge itself. It is a claim of the district lodge on behalf of the entire membership. The Title I is an individual claim of the officers to prevent the removal for speech. However, the Supreme Court in Lynn qualified that individual nature. In Lynn versus sheet metal workers, or sheet metal workers versus Lynn, the Supreme Court said, oh no, this is not just an individual claim. If the elected officers are being removed because of their speech, the members who elected them or who represented by them are also chilled with respect to their speech. So even the Title I claim has a dimension that is collective in the Supreme Court's understanding of Lynn versus Supreme Court statement as the rationale for Lynn versus sheet metal workers. And the Title I issue remains in this case. We have a separate Title I count, as this court is aware, and that removal for speech has a chilling effect. It is not that we are seeking to lift the trusteeship under Title I. We did say that in the original complaint, that that was one of the prayers for relief. But we can see that Title I is not a remedy for lifting the trusteeship. But it is clear from Lynn that officers do not lose their elected positions because of speech and just because a trusteeship is in place. They retain them and they retain all their rights. And in this case, there would never have been, Your Honor, there would never have been any trusteeship without the removal of the officers. This was payback. It was a revenge against Scott Anderman and Supley for challenging her for election and for calling her out for financial fraud.
Let me turn to another issue. The statute specifically says that a trusteeship can be authorized or ratified after a fair hearing. You agree with that?
That's correct, as interpreted by this court in the mine workers decision.
I'm asking you what the statute says. The statute says it can be authorized or ratified.
That's true.
So are you taking the position that if a trusteeship is imposed without a hearing and without a valid finding or presence of an emergency, but then within a short time afterwards, there is a fair hearing and the grounds, which just for the sake of this hypothetical, the grounds to justify trusteeship are proven at that subsequent hearing, are you saying that that can never cure or be the basis of the imposition of a trusteeship if there had been an invalid trusteeship imposed previously?
Yes. And that's
and why would that be given what the statute says?
Because as this circuit pointed out in the mine workers decision, it begs the question as to whether there is a fair hearing and post-ratification. If there was no emergency, and if
I don't see any argument in your brief that this wasn't a fair hearing.
But there is an argument that it is not a fair hearing. We say, first of all, the district lodge, once it is sidelined, no longer is able to present a case. There was no district lodge to protest this trusteeship. And second,
Nobody showed up at the hearing.
Oh, no, people showed up, including the lead applicant of the case, Joe Tiberi.
But your clients didn't show up.
But they were removed on February. The trusteeship hearing was on February 16th. They were removed by Cervantes from, they were not just removed on January 25th. They were then banned on February 9th, a week before the post-trusteeship.
So they were prohibited from participating in the hearing?
They were prohibited from representing the district in any capacity. That was the, you have no ability as a member anymore to represent the members. You couldn't hold
a full-time, is that a full-time position?
It was a full-time position.
And both of your clients, they were full-time?
That's right. Secretary, Treasurer, and President.
You know, I wonder, you keep mentioning mine workers. The statute itself does not require a hearing for a trusteeship to be imposed. It only says that if there is a hearing and it's a fair hearing and it may be before or after, then there's an 18-month immunity. But the statute doesn't require a hearing. And in mine workers, there was no hearing, correct?
That's correct.
That mine workers said about what the situation should be if there had been a hearing after the trusteeship or before is totally dicta. And I don't see any case in our circuit that has ever adopted that proposition. Maybe a district court case, but I'm talking about in this circuit. Is there any?
Well, mine workers is that case because mine workers says, Your Honor, mine workers says that if there is no, it questions the good faith of the parent union if it doesn't provide for a hearing. And it gave specific guidance, but not just mine workers, but this circuit, again, in mail handlers affirmed in 1989, the same rule. It was very specific guidance going forward.
Was a case where there was an emergency imposition of the trusteeship. And then without a hearing, but there was a declaration of an emergency, as I recall. And then they noticed the hearing and the local try to enjoin that hearing because they said that hearing would interfere with elections or, you know, local union business, and that was denied. And then the hearing took place and the trusteeship was imposed or ratified, and there was a proceeding by the National to enforce the trusteeship. And the court said, well, that's moot or not really right now, because that's going on before the district court, and the district court should act, and then will act. That presumes then that trusteeship could be enforced, right?
Well,
if it couldn't be ratified, so to speak, by hearing after the fact, then there would have been no reason in mail handlers to say anything about a possible action on a motion to enforce that trusteeship.
But the validity of that trusteeship hearing wasn't before the court in mail handlers. The mail handlers was concerned with a second independent trusteeship for a failure to hold an election. The first one was for financial fraud, and the court said that because the proceedings, actually, I think the magistrate judge became sick, because the proceedings down below, this is moved, we've moved past it. And we're just focused on this second not financial fraud, but trusteeship for not holding an election. And that trusteeship, the court did apply the mine workers rule and said that the district court couldn't enjoin the pre-trusteeship hearing, but after it was held, or the prior hearing, it could enjoin the imposition of the trusteeship. I would like to go back to Judge Randall's question as to whether or not there could be a fair hearing. In this case, it's a perfect example of what happened. First of all, there are no prior hearings. There are no prior hearings under the IAM Constitution, ever. It's always shoot first and ask questions later. The district lodge has been sidelined. It has no institutional voice, which is the whole point of the statute, is to give the district lodge or the subordinate body a voice. They don't have a voice in the post-trusteeship hearing. So it's problematic to have this statute that says, oh, the district lodge can protest, can present its case to the parent union, when the district lodge has already been incinerated, more or less legally.
Before you sit down, there's a question that's actually a preliminary question that I'd like to ask you a few questions about. It's the mootness argument.
Yes.
And your count, was it count six? Is the Title I
count? It is the count
six.
Yes.
That count is clearly not moot because you're seeking back pay.
That's correct.
Which is why I asked you if they were. So that count is not moot, but we have to remember we're here on an appeal from a denial of preliminary injunction. And I'd like you to address the question, what kind of an injunction can be issued now, since there's been so much water over the dam, and there are new officers who have been elected?
No, not yet.
Well, they take office in January. What?
There has been no election yet.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be on the 29th of November.
To my knowledge, there has not been an election, but I there's nothing in the record.
The allegation here by, maybe I misread this, but I thought from the defendants was that there was a new election scheduled for November 29th.
Well, let me address the question as to the new election. First of all, that election is void because the elected leadership has been barred from running. But more important, if this trusteeship is void ab initio, then this parent union, IAM, has no legal authority to conduct the election. And yes, of course, to go back to the status quo ante, to reinstate the elected leadership. And by the way, there was an elected election going on in January and February of earlier this year that was stopped by the parent union. And now there's a new election.
So if I understand your point, that it is, and I'd like the defendants to address this. The point is, it's not moot because forget about count six, okay, for the moment. It's not moot because they were barred from ever running again. So even if there was another election, an injunction, a preliminary injunction would prevent the bar and you'd have to have a new election.
That's
your point?
Or go back to the old election. There was an election going on. And if we went back to the status quo, that election would just play out the way it had before. So if it's void, it's void. They have no authority to conduct it. But more to the point, it's not just the Title I claim that where there's a chilling effect on the members. If the members are having an election where the rule is you cannot put in place anybody who is going to challenge Cervantes for financial fraud or you will be trustee, they are not then able to have officers of their own choosing. There is a continuing irreparable effect, not just from the Title I claim, but from the Title III claim. Because there's an enduring structural effect from the Title III claim.
All right, thank you.
Let's suppose I, for the sake of argument, that we were to find that the initial imposition of trusteeship was void ab initio because there was no declaration of an emergency or emergency basis for doing so without a hearing. But we found that there was a hearing and those grounds satisfy and justify the imposition of the trusteeship on March 17th. And so there was a void trusteeship from January 26th to March 17th, but then it was not void after that. What grounds would there be for what injuries resulted from that period of voidness and that would justify the imposition of preliminary injunction?
But Judge, it's not just a limited period where it's void and suddenly it becomes unvoid. It's void from the inception. So what the relief in this case would be to reinstate and go back to have a prior hearing again with the courts.
Let me ask it this way. Suppose a district court judge gets a motion for a preliminary injunction, complaint, motion for a preliminary injunction with a bunch of declarations attached and a proposed order, and without even hearing from the defendants, signs the order and says, enjoin. Defendants say, That's unfair. We want to file our pleadings. We want to have a hearing. And the judge gets all the pleadings, has a hearing, and then signs the same order and says, I found a basis for entering the injunction and I'm entering it and signs it. And it comes up to us on appeal. And we find that what the judge initially did was an error, but what the judge did after the hearing was not. Are we supposed to vacate the second injunction?
As I understand the question, what should have happened in that case is that the parent union can just restore the status quo ante. They can have another prior hearing. That's not barred, but they have to go back through the trusteeship procedure. And there's one other thing that I wanted to get in before I sat down.
Answering my hypothetical.
My
hypothetical is that if the district court enters an erroneous order that then follows the correct procedure and later enters a proper order, supposed to vacate the second order because the first one was erroneous?
In joining the trusteeship?
For anything. It doesn't even have to be a trusteeship. Be an injunction over anything. I'm just asking about what a court is supposed to do or how it works if a body takes a void action, a legal action subsequent that has the same result. What do we do generally in that circumstance?
I think that that's taken up in the mail handler's case where the district court said, you cannot enjoin this prior hearing. You can't do that, but you have to let that go forward. That doesn't mean you lose the jurisdiction to bar the reimposition of the trusteeship. This situation is different because the lack of jurisdiction or the voidness results from not having this prior hearing, which is necessary except in an emergency to a fair hearing. I mean, the hypothetical that, well, what if it's a fair hearing later, begs the question as to whether it can be what the district lodge removed when they didn't have to do it. They didn't have to do it. They could have had the prior hearing. And in this case in particular, it's very important to stress that the trusteeship panel had no authority to block the original trusteeship or say it was wrong. It could just talk about continuing it, and it had no authority to reinstate the elected leadership because of this slice and dice thing. Oh, well, we didn't remove them because of a trusteeship, when in fact they did. Does fit the functional definition of 402H. So the panel, this so-called post-trusteeship hearing, didn't ratify the removal of the officers. The post-trusteeship hearing said, hey, we don't have any authority to look at that, which was the whole point of the trusteeship. Why should the plaintiffs show up at a hearing where they can't be reinstated and they've just been fined $265,000 each a week before and told never dare to try to represent the membership again? I mean, they were terrified, obviously, and there was no district lodge there to present a case. And that's why a post-trusteeship hearing was so problematic.
What has happened to the $270,000? Has that been paid?
No, we're still appealing it.
You're appealing that within the union?
Within the union, and it's been upheld at this point.
Okay.
And the ban has been increased from 5 years to forever. They can never hold an office, basically because of the phone bill.
All right. Any questions, Judge Rogers?
No.
Judge Randolph?
No.
All right. Thank you. We'll give you some time on rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Hudson Plush?
Good morning. May it please the court. Evan Hudson Plush, Cohen Weiss and Simon LLP for the appellee's defendants. This case involves an interlocutory appeal of the denial plaintiff's motion for a preliminary injunction, a mandatory preliminary injunction, seeking to lift the trusteeship imposed by an international union, the International Association of Machinists, or IAM, also known as the Grand Lodge, over one of its subordinate bodies, District Lodge 142. It's a case involving internal union affairs of a union trying to stop serious financial malpractice in a statute, the LMRDA, which presumes the trusteeship was validly imposed for a period of about 18 months. Before turning to the merits, however, I did want to address the jurisdiction of this court to hear this appeal in light of intervening events. And asking, or going directly to Judge Randolph's question, yes, elections have happened.
On the 29th?
On the 29th of November. Right. Not only have they happened, but the results, the ballots have been counted, the members have been notified, the election has been certified. The new officers are elected.
And they take office on January 3rd?
Second. They will be seated on January 3rd.
So perhaps you ought to offer an affidavit of some type for the record in this case, because all we have is your brief citing something on a website.
Thank you for that suggestion, Your Honor. The website is the website of the District Lodge, and those are the official results of the election. But if,
I understand this, that, but that's not part of the record of this court.
Well, because it goes to subject matter jurisdiction, the court can consider it.
Why can't you just offer the affidavit? I mean, you're making representations here today that not only was the election scheduled for November 29th, but it has occurred and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Your Honor, it was certified, I believe, 2 days ago or 1 day ago.
Well, why don't you confer with
putting an affidavit to that effect in the record for this court?
Absolutely not. We can do that.
Maybe you can just talk to counsel for the plaintiffs and get a stipulation.
Sure, I will gladly do that.
Take the issue out of the case, in other words.
And the fact that this election has occurred triggers another provision of the LMRDA, LMRDA Title IV. It was run, the election was run under Title IV, as we noted in our brief. Under Title IV, there's a provision 29 U.S.C. 483, which says the exclusive remedy for challenging an election already conducted is through the Secretary of Labor. It means to challenge that election is to go to the Department of Labor. First, you file internal challenges within the union, then you go to the DOL.
What is the cite on that again?
29 U.S.C. 483.
Thank you.
And it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court in Local 82 versus Crowley, which is 467 U.S. 526. So reinstatement is just no longer relief that is available to plaintiffs for numerous reasons. Number one is Title IV. Number two is that, as counsel acknowledged, they were not removed pursuant to the trusteeship, but pursuant to the shortage, which is a financial procedure under Article 7, Section 5. And while
well, his argument is that it's really, you know, tomato, tomato, you may say that, but it was really the trusteeship that removed. What's your response?
Well, they were removed the day before, and I believe his argument is that removal in and of itself was a trusteeship under the definition of trusteeship under the LMRDA. And there is black letter law on that the disciplinary removal of officers is not a trusteeship. The lead case is Martier versus Laborers, 410 F second 32 out of the Third Circuit. And so that was not a trusteeship. So they can no longer be instated.
What is it? Third Circuit.
Martier versus Laborers, 410 F second 32.
Thank you.
Did that answer the question?
So what about the fact that the Constitution of the National Union seems to be in conflict, or is arguably in conflict with at least our mine workers case that interprets the statutory requirement of a hearing prior to the imposition of a trusteeship?
Two responses to that, Aaron. First, I do believe that mine workers' case is distinguishable on this front because the Constitution in that case had no trusteeship provision whatsoever. There was no provision whatsoever, and there was no hearing ever held there. That being said, the way to read this Constitution in conformity with that decision, even with that distinction, is that when the president believes that they're in the language of the Constitution, that it is necessary to impose a trusteeship. It is necessary to impose a trusteeship to correct financial malpractice. That constitutes the need for immediate action, in the words of the mine workers case, that you need to go in there, you need to put that trusteeship in before the hearing because there is financial malpractice going on. You would not want those you're accusing of financial malpractice to have access to the bank accounts.
Was there evidence in the audit that documents records were being destroyed?
The evidence of the record destruction is that after plaintiff Scott Anderman was removed pursuant to the shortage proceeding, she was to return her phone, and it was a district lodge issued telephone. And rather than return the phone as is, she wiped it clean such that they no longer had access to whatever.
That's an additional reason, isn't it, for immediate action?
Yes, in our brief, we noted that was one reason. Another reason was that 4 days or 3 days prior to imposition of the trusteeship, the auditors had interviewed the former bookkeeper, who was no longer there, and that bookkeeper informed the auditors for the very first time that President Supley had directed her put fraudulent numbers, fake numbers, onto W-2 forms, federal tax forms, which was highly disconcerting.
So what if we believe that our precedent requires us to only validate the imposition of a trusteeship without a hearing if there was a declaration of an emergency or if there was an emergency that justified it, and we find that the district court shouldn't have found such an emergency because the district court asked the defendants below if they were relying on such an emergency. They said no.
Your Honor, we did say no, and we said no. The reason was, to us, it was so clear under the laborer's case that once a fair hearing is held, that whether there was an emergency or not is irrelevant. We have not weighed, however, and there are cases on this, the ability to defend the district court's decision that there were, in fact, emergency circumstances. So though we believe you, Your Honors, do not need to reach that question, because the laborer's case is clear that issue.
I am not certain about this, but I just want to ask you, in the other circuits, is there such a law that says that you, unless there's an emergency, you have to have a hearing before a trusteeship?
In the second, third, fourth, and fifth circuit, the law is very clear that you do not need to have an emergency at the time you impose the hearing, impose the trusteeship, so long as the Constitution so allows and a hearing is held reasonably promptly.
Right. Are there any circuits going the other way?
I believe the Ninth Circuit, though I'm not.
Okay, thanks.
And I just want to address the facts of laborers, because they are a little confusing, but directly on point, as understood. On June 20th there, the International Union imposed an emergency supervision without a hearing. The word supervision there is synonymous with trusteeship for purposes of Title III. Then on July 28th, then the local refused to allow the trusteeship to be imposed. So the international went to court to enforce the trusteeship. And the district court refused to enforce it because it said there was no emergency. That case then goes up on to interlocutory appeal before the circuit. In the meantime, a hearing is held, and on August 2nd, the General Executive Board votes to continue the trusteeship. This court was then confronted with the question of whether it even needed to address the district court's July 28th decision refusing to enforce the trusteeship. And the court said, no, we don't need to do that. That's moot. That is no longer relevant. And the plaintiffs say, well, they're actually referring to a different trusteeship, and there was another trusteeship. And that other trusteeship was the reason for the mootness. But that's wrong. On page 1393 of that decision, the circuit very clearly indicates that the reason for the mootness was, quote, the supervision voted by the General Executive Board on August 2nd after a hearing before a special final. So it is quite clear, in our view, that that renders irrelevant that decision. And the way to read that decision in conformity with mine was to say, to the extent it was, mine workers uses the term void ab initio, that it was void ab initio from the time it was imposed until there is a fair hearing. And that, again, is clear because in mine workers there was no fair hearing, and the local had disaffiliated, precluding a fair hearing from ever happening in that case.
Well, they argue that there was no fair hearing here and couldn't have been a fair hearing.
There was a full day of hearings. There was 28 voluminous exhibits entered. There were before three uninvolved members, a trial committee of three uninvolved members. There was a stenographer. Everyone was invited. The plaintiffs were sent letters telling them they could attend and that they would have the right to enter evidence, to cross-examine witnesses, challenge the trusteeship, and they did not appear. There are members.
Your friend on the other side says, well, they weren't allowed to speak on behalf of the union, so how could they appear?
That is wrong. They were permitted to appear and speak on behalf of District Lodge 142 for why the trusteeship was not imposed. They were no longer officers at that time. They were at that time temporarily, it was not permanent yet, temporarily suspended, subject to an evidentiary hearing under the shortage proceeding, subject to an appeal under the shortage proceeding. But they absolutely could attend and challenge the trusteeship in that hearing. And just to briefly touch on the procedure under Article 6, the international president found that there was significant financial malpractice why he imposed the trusteeship, which was then found to be valid by the trial committee. And I just wanted to quickly go over what some of that financial misconduct was. The plaintiff, the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Enderman, self-authorized payments directly into her own bank account without any documentation or approval. I've already mentioned the fraudulent W-2s. And third, there was $270,000 of a plaintiff supply in contemporaneous emails that are in the record acknowledged is Grand Lodge money, is international money. He moved out of the general account into a separate account, not properly disclosed, that was labeled a building corporation account. On top of that, the auditors found that the district lodge had been spending $200,000 additional over the course of 5 years on phones and electronics, 196 devices for 18 members. There's 18 staff members, as well as $50,000 for overpayments and vacation pay and bonuses.
Were the payments for the phones or electronic devices, were they made to, for example, Apple or a carrier, Verizon or something? Or
Sprint. They were made to Sprint, yes.
Okay. Before you run out of time, the plaintiffs say, as I understand it, that the case is not moot. Because as part of the trusteeship that was imposed, they were barred from running for office. And so the fact that there's been new officers elected wouldn't matter because they were entitled to an injunction reinstating them. Can you respond to that?
I have seen no case standing for that proposition, but I think the boilerplate law is once an election has occurred under Title IV of the LMRDA, the sole and exclusive means to challenge that election
is through the Secretary of Labor.
And then go to the DOL. So they could have, maybe should have, challenged that election internally. I don't know if they will or did. Internally, and then go to the DOL. The Secretary of Labor can then decide whether to overturn the election, but it is no longer within the province of this court.
And the only relief that they could get on a preliminary injunction would be to reinstate them as officers. And you say that would be, in effect, challenging the results of the election?
Correct.
Okay.
And the other basis they sought that in their request for relief was to hold an election. But again, that election has happened.
But they couldn't run.
Sorry?
But they couldn't run in the election.
Correct.
Okay.
All right, Judge Rogers, any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. Mr. Gagan, we'll give you 3 minutes.
Mel Handlers did not affirm a post-trusteeship ratification for failure to hold a prior hearing. What happened in that case was there was no trusteeship, an emergency supervision. And by the way, I focus on the word emergency. The claim of the laborers was, this is an emergency. The district court said, no, it isn't. So it didn't go into effect. Then they had, so there was no trusteeship to ratify. Then they had a hearing for an emergency supervision later that laid it out in more detail. And there was a hearing. And the court said, look, this is moot at this point. And they focused on the second trusteeship. There was never a post-trusteeship hearing to ratify. And in this case, as I stated earlier, in this case, there can't be a fair hearing if, in absence of an emergency, no reason to not to hold a prior hearing, the parent union gets rid of the district lodge that is supposed to make the protest, bans the plaintiffs, and fines them $265,000.
Can you tell me what you're seeking? A reversal, yes, of the denial of a preliminary injunction.
And right? An entry of a preliminary.
Now, what kind of injunction are you seeking? What would the terms of the injunction be at this stage after the trusteeship is going to expire? And there's been a new election, there are new officers. What sort of injunction are you talking about?
The status quo ante. Reinstate the plaintiffs as elected officers, allow the election that was going forward. And this was only, this wasn't a long time ago.
But,
this
the,
was
but you have to, you have to address the defendant's argument that to do that, the district court in its order would have to set aside the election that's occurred. And you can't do that without going through the Secretary of Labor.
That's not true, because under these, this court's decisions in both mail handlers and Brennan versus mine workers, this court has broad equitable power to correct a violation of the trusteeship of Title III. The Secretary of Labor under Title IV doesn't even take cognizance of that. So that has to be read, that 483 provision that counsel quoted has to be read with the broad of equitable authority that this court recognized in Brennan versus mine workers and in mill handlers to undo the effects of the trusteeship. Congress was very concerned about these intrusions. And there is, you know, if the election hadn't been held, it would, first of all, the election was held on an expedited basis to move this. It was speeded up after this appeal was filed. And the attempt here is to argue to the court that we're out, you can't touch us anymore, but there is a continuing irreparable, remember, the members have not been allowed to have offices of their own choosing in this election because of the trusteeship, because of the irreparable injury. The secretary can't address that.
To set aside the election, wouldn't you be able to get all of these remedies that you're asking the court now to order?
Okay, that's fine.
The order is very simple. And that is, A, the trusteeship that was imposed on January 26th and 25th.
Answer my question.
I'm not sure that I heard it properly. I think there was a little static, and I apologize.
If the Secretary of Labor sets aside the election, then are not the remedies you're speaking of available to you?
No.
Why not?
Because for one thing, if the Secretary does set aside the election, it has to have it do so under a Title IV provision. We have a Title III challenge to the authority of the IM to conduct the election at all. And there is a reparable.
I understand that. And the secretary can take all that to account if you raise these issues. And suppose the secretary decides to set aside the election.
The secretary might, in its discretion, do that or might not, in its discretion.
Counsel, deal with my hypothetical, please. If the secretary sets aside the election, then are not the remedies you're talking about now available?
No.
Why not?
Because, as this court pointed out in mine workers, there is, even for a Title III violation, there is a remedy in damages. There is, for the District Lodge, for its losses as a result of the unlawful trusteeship, there is a chilling effect that, and there is a need, in particular, Your Honor, for a ban on the reimposition of a trusteeship. No, it is not moot, and you cannot get that relief under Title IV, and that's essential to the case.
I don't know of anything you haven't cited that would bar the secretary in setting aside the election, and then you can pursue these other matters if you say the secretary has no jurisdiction over the Title III argument.
First of all, the secretary cannot set aside the election. Only a district court can decide set aside the election if the secretary brings a lawsuit. And second, we cannot get the relief that we're seeking here, which is barring the reimposition of the trusteeship, ending this reign of terror at the top of the IAM. Every person who has, they talk about this.
I get your argument.
In fact, this might be the best way to conclude it. Every person who has called out defendant Cervantes for financial embezzlement, which she has not denied on a massive scale, has been systematically removed. Pantoja, admittedly appointed officers. Joe Tiberi, gone. Ian Scott Enderman, gone. Fined $265,000 for daring to raise the embezzlement charge. Supply the same. That's what's going on. Systematic suppression of dissent. That's what Title III entitles us to have this court enforce the LMRDA and let members have officers of their own choosing, even if they call out their leadership for massive union corruption.
Thank you, counsel. We have your argument, and we will take the matter under advisement.